welcome to the podcast at Delphi.org. I'm your host, Jim McKeith. Joining me today is my co-host, Nick Hodges.
Hello.
Hey, Nick. And also, our guest today is Serena DuPont.
Hello. Serena. Thank you for having me. Hello, yeah. Hello.
I realized I've had you on here before a long time ago. Not that there's anything wrong with having you again, obviously, but I was thinking I hadn't had you on the podcast before, but I realized I did, like, right when I first started with Embarcadero, which was, like, 4 years ago now.
I realized that this June will be my six-year anniversary with Embarcadero.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. It's like, wow, is this time's flying by.
It really is. It is just such a blast to work here. I have to
say. What's really exciting to me is that when I started, it was right when we were releasing, about a month or two prior to us releasing XE2, and kind of the first iteration of Fire Monkey, and look how far we've come since then with the product and how it's evolved. So that's really exciting.
Yeah. Now, you are the Fire Monkey product manager, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So we have a team of three PMs. It's myself, David Millington, Marco Cantu, and Nick Hodges is our director, our boss. And
he's a real, real pain in the rear.
He's pretty awesome. And we each focus on different areas of the product. So David focuses on C++ Builder and the IDE. Marco focuses on Delphi, and I myself focus on FireMonkey, the product demos, the documentation, samples, styling, and also RAT server.
Okay.
So we all focus on different areas of the product because it's a big product. Obviously, we have Delphi, we have C++ Builder, and the RAT Studio product suite. So we've each over the years focused on different things, and some of that has changed over the years, but we all each have our product areas that we focus on, and then, of course, we collaborate all a lot and work together on different tasks.
Yeah. Now, I didn't hear anybody over VCL specifically. Is that because VCL is kind of a mature, not a lot changes going on, or is that...
No, that would be, I would say VCL is Marco's focus.
Okay.
That would fall under the kind of the Delphi focus. Marco focuses on VCL as well.
Yeah, so we're definitely very interested in the VCL. Anybody say we're not.
Definitely. Yeah. And we've evolved the VCL quite. I mean, we've done some great enhancements to VCL over the past couple of years in regards to the new components we've added for Windows 10, new styling, etc. So, you know, we've made a lot of great enhancements there and have done the same type of or similar enhancements on the Windows side for FireMonkey. So we try to keep those, you know, somewhat in sync, especially when it comes to the Windows 10 support.
Yeah, it seems like every now and then if we ever focus on one thing, then somebody will say, oh, no, they're abandoning something else. If we, you know, talk about C++, oh, you're abandoning Delphi. No,
we're focused on all the great things that are part of the product. And, you know, we value all the different areas of the product and we're very much moving the product forward. And, you know, we have a lot of exciting things planned for the future.
Yeah. If someone asks if we're if VCL is deprecated, I'm like, it's not deprecated as long as people are using it. It will keep that one around. It's a really good framework. And, you know, point out all the new features we've added to it recently as well, new components and stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, something to really highlight, you know, the Windows 10 components we've added over the past couple of releases, the styling, the Windows 10 store deployment support. I mean, that really opens it up. You can take an existing application and now target, you know, literally millions of new users that are using Windows 10 as their main operating system. So that's really a great enhancement.
Quick edits.
Quick edits, yes.
We added quick edits, which makes managing the components a lot easier.
And that was a VCL specific.
That's right. And we do have it on the roadmap for FireMonkey as well. But the first iteration of the quick edit support, we selected VCL for the first iteration. And there will be a FireMonkey version, or at least it's in our roadmap. Something that we'll be working on is to have the quick edit support for FireMonkey as well, so that all the great things you can do with VCL quick edits, you know, the right-click context menu for quickly changing, you know, label text and colors and all those different quick settings that you want to adjust, having that same type of functionality for your FireMonkey controls. And that's a feature that we've gotten really great feedback on since introducing it and something that we're looking to expand to FireMonkey as well.
Yeah, I know that we had some people asking if they could expand it earlier on, if they could add their own stuff to quick edits. And it's like, oh, that's a good idea. So maybe we'll see that at some point as well.
Yeah, that's exciting. Something, you know, we always get a lot of great ideas when we put out a new feature for customers, and that's something that, you know, on the product management side, we continue to, of course, encourage our customers to submit feature requests, because product management does frequently review those, go through them, we prioritize them, we have discussions about them. So if you have something that's near and dear to your heart, and you think, you know, this would be a great feature or an expansion of an existing functionality, please don't hesitate to go to our quality portal and submit a feature request.
Yeah, I tell the people a lot, they're like, how do I get this feature? I'm like, submit it as a feature request, because that's the they pay a lot of attention to those. So yeah, that good to remind people.
We do, and of course you can email us as well, but if you submit it through our official system, then it's a lot easier for us on the PM side to track it.
Yeah, if you're like me, you probably get more emails than you can keep up with. I sometimes feel like I'm losing ground.
That's definitely true, and while we, of course, want to respond to all the emails we get, and we try our best to do that, if there's a central place like a quality portal, that makes things a lot easier.
Yeah, I think I need to get some sort of task management system that automatically attaches. Like, you know, you email the help desk and it responds back, hey, your ticket number is this. And if I had something like that.
Jim has placed you in a queue.
That's right.
Here's your number. That's pretty funny. You know, I used to have a number taker outside of my cubicle in the office.
That's right.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, and it was actually placed right outside my cubicle because there was always a line, and the gentleman who sat next to me said one of those days he brought it in and hung it up and said, you know, there's always people standing outside your cube in a line, so now it's time for them to take a number. It was pretty funny.
I didn't know the origin of that. I thought maybe it was like had existed previously or something like that.
Okay. No. It appeared one day.
So now your background is in graphic software, right, Serena?
That's right. I have a long background and history with graphic software applications. So the products I managed prior to coming to Embarcadero were Manga Studio, which was a illustration program. It was actually the number one manga and comic illustration application that's used worldwide by comic artists, and you had artists like The Watchmen creator Dave Gibbons and many other famous artists that have used the product, and then also Anime Studio, which is a 2D animation product, and then also Pixelmator, and if you're a Mac user, you're probably familiar with Pixelmator. It's a very popular image editing program, but similar to Photoshop. But, you know, it was a smaller feature set, but a very powerful product as well. So I have a lot of love for graphics products. I've been using, you know, Photoshop, Illustrator, and all these other applications for a long time. And one of the things you may see is when you go to the Embarcadero website, you see a lot of the annotated screenshots with the overlays, etc. I create a lot of those because one of the things that I focus on with FireMonkey is the ability, obviously, to create nice-looking applications with the custom themes, the native styles, etc., and also working on nice screenshots that highlight all those great capabilities.
Yeah, I really like those screenshots, actually, that you put together. So I didn't know. I knew that you were involved at some point, but I didn't know how much you did on those. So.
Yeah, I think most of the screenshots since I've been here, well, at least over the past 5 or so years, most of the screenshots that have been used on the website and in the hero shots and banners, etc., were screenshots I actually created.
Ah, very cool.
And Serena does a lot of the videos that you watch as well.
That's right. The what's new videos, the feature videos, and also I like doing the, you know, the technical webinars, of course, as well, and focusing on things like user interface guidelines for iOS and Android. I think those were some really popular sessions that I've done, gotten really good feedback on, because it's something, especially if you're coming from a Windows background, it's very different to move to iOS and Android, and each platform has their own guidelines, do's and don'ts, and that's something over the past couple of years I've really focused on. When it comes to our styling that we provide out of the box, when it comes to custom styles, and really helping, you know, educate our customers and show them what are the types of things that they should be doing and should not be doing with their applications to ensure that they're accepted into the App Store if they're building, you know, public or consumer type applications.
I remember when XE2 first came out, Olaf Bonin had a blog post talking about how powerful and Delphi was for making iOS apps and rapid development, and he goes, just remember, with great power comes great responsibility. You know, let's make sure we're releasing good quality Delphi apps and not just flooding the App Store with, you know, 1,000 apps, because it's just so easy to crank out a quick app and not put some thought into it, which I think is a really good point that we.
I think that's a really good point, and actually, you know, the kind of a funny anecdote there is that over the years, Apple has really restricted what types of apps go in there. So for example, years ago, we worked on a sample application. It's a flashlight application that lets you invoke your device flashlight and turn it on and off. And we actually submitted that, and I believe we get a response back saying something along the lines, well, there are too many flashlight apps in the App Store already. And that was really more of a sample application, and it had some limited functionality, but they just said, look, there are so many of them already. How many do we really need in there, of a sample application or a basic app that has limited functionality? So I think with the Apple App Store, especially given that they go through the human review process, you see less of that. But yeah, that's a really good point. I think, there is kind of a mix of, or it's a balance, right, between testing something and testing deployment. And that's something great you can do even on the Apple App Store. You can upload an application for test deployment purposes, and then you can cancel the process if you don't want to actually end up publishing it, so that you can ensure that everything that you're building is actually ready to go and ready for submission, should you ultimately choose to submit it and then go through the human review process. So it's kind of a two-step process. When you submit your app, you use the application loader application that Apple provides to upload it. It does kind of an API check. It looks for all the different things that may or may not be wrong with the app. And then once you pass that automated review, it would then enter the human review process. And at that point, if you choose not to publish it, you could cancel it out, but that's kind of a good way to get started with the submission process if you have an application that you're just trying to check to make sure everything is lined up.
Yeah, I love the fact that I can prototype it on Windows, and there's so much of the layout and functionality that you can get working on Windows before you even have to go to mobile.
Yeah, that I think is something that is a key feature that, we try to highlight frequently and try to highlight over and over again, because it's also a key differentiator, right? With the Fire UI multi-device designer, you have the ability to lay out your forms. You can get, customized for a specific form factor or device. You can choose from the predefined ones. You can create a custom view should you have a, I recently got a question on this, and somebody said, well, I want to create a layout or tweak my layout for a 4.5-inch device and a 5.5-inch device, and I don't see some of those represented in the drop-down menu in the form designer. So I said, well, you can create a custom view, and we have instructions on how to do that. So if there is a view that we've predefined and you want to expand that, extend it, have a different size that you can customize the layout for, you can easily create your own view. Now, in most cases, that's not really necessary, and what we provide will be sufficient for all the different target devices that you're planning on deploying your app to, but there might be cases where you want to be able to tweak the layout for a very specific form factor, for example, a 4.5-inch device that you're standardizing on within your enterprise that, would require you to create a custom view. So we have a lot of flexibility, and then the great thing, of course, too, is you can deploy that application on Windows first. We have a Windows mobile-centric style that you can invoke and actually deploy with your application as well. And if you wanted to preview the app on Windows with a mobile-like look and feel, and then, of course, you can also deploy it to the iOS simulator. You can deploy it to your, actual physical devices. And then I think it was in the last release we added, in Berlin, we added the live preview functionality. And that really takes that whole prototyping process to the next level, because it allows you to take and develop an application in the Form Designer and then preview its changes live as you're making those changes in the IDE on connected devices. And you can either first deploy the app to an iOS device or an Android device or Windows or Mac machine, or you can actually download our applications through the App Store. And then over your IP, using an IP address, you're able to connect to the IDE, assuming you're on the same network. And then all the changes you're making in the IDE, you can actually live preview on the device.
Yeah, you beat me too. I was going to mention that because I remember I did the video for that, and I had all the devices on my desktop. That was so cool to be able to change it and look, it's on all these screens. And that's a really cool feature.
Yeah, that's something, we always are looking at ways to make it easier for customers to build applications for multiple targets, and also to take away to reduce the time frame and the time it takes to deploy an application and go through that whole build and deploy process. And this really allows you to continue to prototype your application without having to hit deploy every time and build the application for the target device. It's also great if you don't have your device provisioned yet. So let's say you have an iPad and you haven't gone through that whole provisioning profile process yet of being able to actually connect to that device from the IDE. You can just download the application through the App Store, assuming you're on the same network, connect to the IDE, and then design time as you're making changes in the form designer, see those changes actually come to life on your iPad or iPhone device or Android device. So that's really also a big time saver.
Yeah. I was just last night was presenting at the local Boise Software Developers Group meeting. I was showing off Viswino and connecting Arduino devices to Delphi and stuff like that, which is really cool. But afterwards, I was talking to one of my friends I used to work with, actually, and he was talking about he had this app he'd made. And he was thinking about putting in the cool app contest. It sounds really cool. Originally, he was doing this process, building these photo collages in Photoshop. But it was kind of getting tedious because he was getting more bigger, complex things. And he wasn't really happy with Photoshop. So he switched to Illustrator, Adobe Illustrator. And he said it worked better, but now with the higher resolution photos, Illustrator just gets really bogged down and can't handle all these photos. And he's like, you know, FireMonkey's pretty powerful. I bet I could make something in FireMonkey to make these photo collages. And this is just something he makes as a hobby, I guess, if you will. And so he spent a little time, made this photo collage builder in FireMonkey. And he says he is really happy with it. It's way better than what he's getting with Illustrator or Adobe. He's able to do everything he wants to do with it. And it is much more faster, much more performant on Windows. It's only possible he's targeting with it. But because it just made it really easy. FireMonkey made it really easy for him to do all that kind of graphical manipulation and make exactly what he wanted to do. And I thought it was really neat that here he's, you know, move from Adobe Illustrator or Photoshop to Illustrator to FireMonkey, and he's happiest to FireMonkey for it. I find there's lots of times that little things I want to do, it's just so quick to get them done that, you know, 80% of the functionality, I can get that done in no time with Delphi. It's just fantastic for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great story, and I definitely think it's something that he should be submitting to the Cool Apps contest.
Yeah.
Which is great. That's a great thing to talk about. How often do we run that Cool Apps contest?
So we do monthly winners. We just had the 3D Train Studio, which is pretty cool, especially if you're into trains, where you can build 3D model railroads. And it's designed to emulate the process of building model railroads, except it's 3D on your desktop. And so you build the model railroads. You can, for example, if you actually want to build it, you can design your model railroad on the computer and then buy the parts and actually build the physical model railroad based on that design.
Very cool. I know that in Hamburg, Germany, they have that awesome, I forget the name. It's
Wonderland.
Wonderland, yeah. Yes. And they run all that software, I think, with Delphi. They build it all with Delphi.
Yeah, all the software that controls all the airplanes and trains and cars and people and everything on the I think it's the world's largest model railroad. If not, it's the Europe's largest model railroad or something like that. But it's up there. It's all controlled with Delphi. And a cool thing actually they did is one of our MVPs, Daniel Wolf, is the chief software developer there. So, I mean, it's a big effort involved because they're always expanding it. And when we made Starter Edition for free, he's like, huh. And went out and grabbed Starter Edition, and he had to do a couple changes because they hadn't switched to Berlin yet. Rebuilt the whole thing in Starter. So he said you can control airports and trains all with Delphi, so which is true.
Yeah, that is that to me is really awesome. I mean, I've spent a bunch of time watching the videos on YouTube, and I think it's like the most visited site in Hamburg or something, like tourist attraction.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just awesome. I mean, if you haven't seen the video, go to YouTube and search for Wonderland Hamburg, and that's just I think it's an awesome exhibit, something I'll definitely look forward to seeing live someday, and a great example of the power of Delphi.
Yeah, and I think it's like Wunder Land. It's spelt a little differently. It's not Wonderland like Alice in Wonderland, but it's with a U, if I remember correctly.
Wunderland.
Yes.
Wunderland.
Say it in German for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, Wunderland. Wunderland. Yeah, well, it is you know, wonderful. So that's pretty exciting. And yeah, you know, that's something I think for me on the PM side of things, I always love seeing what our customers are building with our products. And yeah, you know, it's something that we work closely with the marketing team on case studies and, you know, lots of different outreach opportunities to really showcase our customers and showcase what the technology can do. So that's something that on the PM side we're always engaging with customers on as well. So if you have a specific app that you build and you think, you know what, this would make for a great case study for Embarcadero to showcase Delphi and showcase the solution that you've built, then please feel free to reach out to any of us on that as well.
Yeah. Well, we're working on a case study with Niagara Falls because they have that new light colored light system they put in. It's all controlled by Delphi.
Wow.
Yeah. And
sounds like Delphi controls a lot of things.
You know,
I spoke to a customer this morning that was writing Delphi that controls test machines to test electronic cables.
Wow.
Yep. Well, and the, was it Cassandra, Cassini probe, space probe, all the test software for that was in from the European Space Agency was written in Delphi. So it wasn't on the probe, but it was all the testing software on the ground was written in Delphi.
There you go.
But
you need to control something? Delphi is your tool.
Well, and it was interesting.
I could just do that with my dog.
Yeah.
Well, you know, nowadays with all the IoT devices and the support we provide, it's always interesting to me because, you know, as you may or may not know listening to this podcast, we have over 50 pre-built components that are part of our ThingConnect IoT device component library available via Getit in Berlin. And they really range from home automation to, you know, fitness devices, gadgets, medical devices, et cetera, that you can build apps for, both with the Bluetooth LE standard or Z-Wave. And what's really interesting to me is there's so many new devices coming out every day, and you can see things even marketed at the pet industry, like monitoring your dog's activity level. And they even have some devices of what is your dog thinking and how are they feeling, and it's pretty awesome.
You zap your dog with the fence thing. That's what I need. Stop barking.
Yeah, I think that they don't, you know, they have so many different devices nowadays really targeted at everyone. And also to make your life easier. I mean, I'm debating whether or not I want to get a Wi-Fi enabled or smart thermostat because
that's exactly what I was going to say.
You know, really awesome. I was looking at it the other day. I'm like, if I could just remotely control it so that when I'm not home, you know, the house doesn't get super cool, but when I'm home, I can cool it without having to go upstairs. So there's that whole part about enabling your life and just making the little things that are somewhat tedious on a day-by-day basis easier for you and simplifying the process.
Yeah, I got a buddy who's putting in a thing. He's using that little new Raspberry Pi. What's the new one?
Oh,
brand new one. Little teeny thing. I mean, it's the size of a...
I want to say one... No, that's not right.
Yep. It's this. I mean, it's just really small. It's the size of a 9-volt battery, only thinner, something like that. And he's going to use it to monitor his hot water or his to make sure this hot water heater is not leaking, and to make sure that he has enough salt in his water softener.
Zero. This is Raspberry Pi Zero.
Zero. Yeah, this is the same guy who had the fridge and the stove that. Or hooked up to the internet, if I remember correctly, we talked about that.
Well, you should tell him to look at Visuino. Honestly.
Okay.
If he, I will. Because I actually, last night I was doing, doing a presentation at the users group on it. And it's like, oh, look, we'll just, I'll connect these two wires here and drop a couple things on the component. And now my Delphi app can see the temperature in the room. It's like 2 minutes worth of work and you're done. And
sweet.
You're able to monitor temperature from your program.
He knows all about breadboards. He's an electrical engineer. I'll let him know about that, yeah.
Yeah,
that's really also very exciting. I mean, just all the different things that you can do to create a smart, you know, smart home and all the different things you like to automate. And I know they're extending that to cars and just all the different, so many different devices that we use on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
It's pretty amazing, you know, how those things have evolved over just the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's moving fast, that's for sure.
All I want to know is, when am I getting my self-driving car? Forget the flying car. I want a self-driving car.
Well, I don't know.
It's going to be soon. I was talking with Craig about this last night, and the reality, because a lot of people are like, oh, what about the liability? And in my opinion, because self-driving cars are going to be so much safer than human drivers because
our
brains are so distracted and we think we're better drivers than we are, but we're not. you know, we're playing with the radio. We're talking.
We kill a million people a year die in car accidents.
Yep. And so, in my opinion, it's not going to be long, and the auto insurance agency is going to say, "Okay, we will give you a discount if you have a self-driving car, and if you don't have a self-driving car, they're going to start upping the insurance rate, and they'll say we'll take all the liability because the number of accidents is going to drop through the floor, and it's going to save them so much money."
Well, and I think eventually we won't even own the cars, right? We'll just simply rent them as on an as-needed basis. It's like Uber. Imagine if every if you could, well, even Uber, jeebers. You know, if Uber were everywhere all the time, you know, and it were not that expensive, you could justify using Uber to get around instead of owning a car.
I really like the part about the self-driving car when it's raining and you're at the mall. There you go. Step outside and you think, you know what? Pick me up right now. Use your little
app. Right here. Yeah, come get me right here.
I know that there are, you know, some cars, like I think the new Teslas, they have some of that capability where they can drive themselves out of the garage into the driveway. They can pick you up. And I think they can actually self-drive themselves as long as you're staying in the same lane. So that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. There was a video. So the Tesla, technically, they're supposed to keep their hands on the wheel because there's different classes of self-driving. But there's a video someone made of people in Tesla's driving, and they're like playing chess or doing all sorts of crazy stuff in their car because they can. Yeah. So it's coming. It's coming fast. And it's going to be a really interesting because it's going to have a huge disruption in the economy, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Like, to me, I think about cruise control. Like, I'm not a huge fan of cruise control. I know a lot of people are. I've never really gotten that comfortable, you know, with cruise control, right? Because setting it at a certain speed, and then I'm always like, oh, I want to hit the brake, and I want to control the car myself. And that's really going to be a mindset change, right? Saying, I'm going to sit in this car that has a steering wheel, and I'm not going to do anything.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I'm editing videos or podcasts, I am incredibly detail-oriented, tedious, and I spend hours and hours and hours and hours on it. But I've trained my son on how to do it. And actually, most of the videos and podcasts anymore, he does almost entirely, edits them. And I found if I listen to them, then I'll be wanting to go through and just make all these little minor tweaks. They're still good, but I want to make all these little minor tweaks that may or may not actually improve the quality of the output, but you know, it's an obsession for me. And I think that's the same thing with cruise control, right? Is we want to make all these minor tweaks, but if I don't listen to them, if I don't watch them, then I'm fine and they work. So I think that's what it's going to have to be with the self-driving cars is we're going to have to just say, I'm not going to look at the wheel. I'm not going to try, you know, and it's going to have to just be, it's good enough.
Think of the time reclamation. I mean, just being able to read or do something else other than sitting in a car. Like, you know, I drive my kids all over heckin' high water, you know. Imagine if I could just first of all, you could just put them in the car and the car will take them there, right? They don't need a driver's license. You don't need a driver's license to ride in a self-driving car, maybe. I don't know how that'll work.
Eventually, at first it will be driver's license, but it won't be long before you won't need them.
Yeah.
That is really really amazing. I think you make a really good point there. I mean, also for the elderly. I mean, think about.
I was just about to say, my folks are getting to that point where they're not feeling great about driving, and something like a self-driving car with an automated service like Uber would just be fantastic.
Yep, I was thinking about that. If you could, you know, if like let's say there's a huge pickup line at my kid's school to pick up the kids after school, and if it could just be they were all from the car service, and the kids just get in the first car and it drives them home, that would be so much more quick.
So much time. And then they're much more efficient at stoplights. They all start up at the same time. And, there's so many good things about it. I can hardly wait.
Yeah.
And I think the really scary part nowadays is the texting and driving. I mean, there have been so many incidents that I've seen people in the car going literally 60 miles an hour with their head down. And I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, it's so dangerous. And there's so many people who get killed every day by, you know, drivers that are distracted.
Just another example of why the car should drive itself and why we're just dead. You know, we're deadly.
Self-driving
cars are not.
So we wanted to keep this short, and we've had a great conversation here. So I was going to share a few little bits of news. The first one I'll point out is Nick's got a new book out. And I know Nick's too modest to promote that himself. It's on dependency injection. So I have both of Nick's other books. So I recommend. I need to go get the dependency injection book because I'm ashamed to say I haven't bought it yet. But I will go get a copy.
It's out on LeanPub.
Yes.
It's the book of the day on LeanPub today, actually.
Ooh.
And you can get the electronic copies. The hard copy, soft paperback copies, like people have gotten before, will be coming in a week or two.
Yep. And this one you were working with Stefan Glinke on.
Stefan did the technical review for me. Much of the book is about the Spring framework and using the container, and he did a technical review for me, and the book is about 150 times better because of his help. Yeah, I'm very grateful to him.
Excellent. I don't sure if I mentioned or not, but we have our new news feed on Embarcadero's community site. If you go to community.embarcadero.com, go to resources news feed, you can get a listing of all the recent blog posts around the community.
There we go. Sounds good.
Right now it's MVPs, and we're adding in tech partners as well. So that's just kind of a great place to go see what's going on. I know there's other sites that do that, but we're trying to really expand what community does. And thought it made sense to include that there.
Hey, you know what Delphi feeds?
Yeah.
You know who owns Delphi feeds?
Well, yeah. It is the Grok software.
Yeah, who owns Grok software?
Yeah, Embarcadero bought Grok software.
Yeah, Embarcadero. So we own Delphi feeds, actually, technically.
So, yeah, maybe we'll just integrate Delphi feeds into community. I don't know.
That'd be great.
Let's see. Also, we just did the Linux Boot Camp this week, which was really, really good. A lot of attendance. Craig Chapman did a phenomenal job going through
really good.
Linux configuration. He's a great guy, did a great job on that. That was really good. I learned a lot in it. We have the replays available up on their website, our community.embarcadero.com. It's one of the featured articles right now, so if you go out there, you can find it really easy.
Excellent.
I think that's what I had for news and tech tips. It's kind of a little intertwined there. The tech tip is read Nick's book and apply what you learned.
I couldn't think of a better tech tip, Jim.
Well, thanks, Nick. Cool. All right.
Thanks
well, lots of stuff coming up. We're working on Godzilla getting closer. The 10.2 Tokyo release will be soon, hopefully.
Soon.
I think I was just talking with Pavel. We're planning a preview webinar, so you can stay tuned for news on that, where you can see a lot more about it, although we did see some in the Linux Boot Camp as well. And lots of exciting stuff going on. Cool apps.
Thanks for coming on, Serena.
Yeah,
thank you. That was my pleasure. Awesome.
Great to have you. All right, well, we'll talk to everybody later. Thanks a lot. Bye. All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.